to accept injury without a spirit of savage resentment, to show ourselves merciful towards those who wrong us. Being a source of good hope to them is characteristic of a benevolent and civilized way of life. Choose to die well when you can. Wait too long, and it might become impossible to do so. If we were to measure what is good by how much pleasure it brings, nothing would be better than self-control. If we were to measure what is to be avoided by its pain, nothing would be more painful than lack of self-control. In our control is the most beautiful and important thing, the thing because of which even the God himself is happy, namely the proper use of our impressions. We must concern ourselves absolutely with the things that are under our control, and entrust the things not in our control to the universe. If you accomplish something good with hard work, the labor passes quickly, but the good endures. If you do something shameful in pursuit of pleasure, the pleasure passes quickly, but the shame endures. Being good is the same as being a philosopher. If you obey your father, you will follow the will of a man. If you choose the philosopher's life, the will of the universe. It is plain, therefore, that your duty lies in pursuit of philosophy. For mankind, evil is injustice and cruelty and indifference to a neighbor's trouble, while virtue is brotherly love and goodness and justice and beneficence and concern for the welfare of your neighbor. For what does the man who accepts insults do that is wrong? It is the doer of the wrong who puts himself to shame. The sensible man wouldn't go to the law, since he wouldn't even consider that he has been insulted. Besides, to be annoyed and angered about such things would be petty. Instead, easily and silently bear what has happened, since this is appropriate for those whose purpose is to be noble-minded. From good people you'll learn good, but if you mingle with the bad, you'll destroy such soul as you had. Generally speaking, if you devote yourself to the life of philosophy while tilling the land at the same time, I couldn't compare it to any other way of life, nor would I prefer any other livelihood. Humanity must seek what is not simple and obvious, using the simple and obvious. In general, of all creatures on earth, man alone resembles God and has the same virtues that he has. Since we can imagine nothing, even in the gods, better than prudence, justice, courage, and temperance, therefore, as God, through the possession of these virtues, is unconquered by pleasure or greed, is superior to desire, envy, and jealousy, is high-minded, beneficent, and kindly, so also man in the image of him, when living in accordance with nature, should be thought of as being like him, and being like him, being enviable, and being enviable, he would forthwith be happy. For we envy none but the happy. Indeed, it is not impossible for a man to be such, for certainly when we encounter men who we call godly and godlike, we do not have to imagine that these virtues came from elsewhere than the man's own nature. Since every man dies, it is better to die with distinction than to live long. Since it so happens that the human being is not soul alone, nor body alone, but a kind of synthesis of the two, the person in training must take care of both, the better part the soul more zealously, as is fitting, but also of the other, if he shall not be found lacking in any part that constitutes man. Thus it appears that exile helps, rather than hinders, body and spirit, by treating them better than they treat themselves. To help us to cheerfully endure those hardships which we may expect to suffer because of virtue and goodness, it is useful to recall what hardships people will endure for immoral reasons. Consider what lustful lovers undergo for the sake of evil desires, and how much exertion others expand for the sake of profit, how much suffering pursuing fame. Bear in mind that they all submit to all kinds of toil and hardship voluntarily. It's monstrous that they endure such things for no honorable reward, yet for the sake of good, we're not ready to bear the slightest hardship. To many people, even to most, despite living safely in their home city, fear of what seems to them the dire consequences of free speech is present. The courageous, in exile or at home, is fearless in the face of such threats. For that reason, they've the courage to say what they think, equally at home or in exile. Why do we criticize tyrants, when in fact we are much worse than they are? We have the same inclinations as they do. We just lack the opportunities to act on them. You will earn the respect of all if you begin by earning the respect of yourself. Don't expect to encourage good deeds in people conscious of your own misdeeds. Luxurious food and drinks in no way protect you from harm. Wealth beyond what is natural is no more use than an overflowing container. Real value is not generated by theatres and baths, perfumes and ointments, but by philosophy. The wealth required by nature is limited and easy to procure. But the wealth required by vain ideals extends to infinity. The greatest reward of righteousness is peace of mind. Let no one be slow to seek wisdom when he is young, nor weary in search of it when he has grown old. For no age is too early or too late for the health of the soul. And to say that the season for studying philosophy has not yet come, or that it has passed and gone, is like saying that the season for happiness is not yet, or that it is now no more. Therefore, both old and young alike ought to seek wisdom. The former, in order that, as age comes over him, he may be young in good things because of the grace of what has been, and the latter, in order that while he is young, he may at the same time be old, because he has no fear of the things which are to come. So we must exercise ourselves in the things which bring happiness, since if that be present, we have everything. If it be absent, all our actions are directed towards attaining it. Death, therefore, the most awful of evils, is nothing to us, seeing that when we are, death has not come, and when death has come, we are not. Self-sufficiency is the greatest of all wealth. He who is not satisfied with a little is satisfied with nothing. A happy and eternal being has no trouble himself and brings no trouble upon any other being. Hence he is exempt from movements of anger and partiality, for every such movement implies weakness. It is impossible to live a pleasant life without living wisely and honorably and justly, and it is impossible to live wisely and honorably and justly without living pleasantly. Whenever any one of these is lacking, when for instance the man is not able to live wisely, though he lives honorably and justly, it is impossible for him to live a pleasant life. No pleasure is itself a bad thing, but the things that produce some kinds of pleasure bring along with them unpleasantness that is much greater than the pleasure itself. One cannot rid himself of his primal fears if he does not understand the nature of the universe, but instead accepts the truth of some mystical story. So without the study of nature, there can be no enjoyment of pure pleasure. Chance seldom interferes with the wise man. His greatest and highest interests have been, are, and will be directed by reason throughout his whole life. The just man is most free from disturbance, while the unjust is full of the utmost disturbance. Of our desires, some are natural and necessary, others are natural but not necessary, and others are neither natural nor necessary, but are due to groundless opinion. Among the things held to be just by law, whatever is proven to be of advantage in men's dealings has the stamp of justice, whether or not it be the same for all. But if a man makes a law, and it does not prove to be mutually advantageous, then it is no longer just. And if what is mutually advantageous varies, and only for a time corresponds to our concept of justice, nevertheless, for that time, it is just for those who do not trouble themselves about empty words, but look simply at the facts.